All right, welcome to the Fit Vegan Podcast. I'm your show host, Maxim Seguin, and I'm the founder and CEO of Fit Vegan Coaching, a company that is on a mission to help 10,000 people get lean, thrive, and reduce their risk of chronic illnesses by 2033 and a million by 2050. I believe that having a fit, healthy body and mind is the foundation to living an incredible life, and this is what the show will give you if you choose to listen and implement. Enjoy the episode and have a great day. All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Fit Vegan Podcast. Today, I'm joined by a dear friend, Stevan Mirkovic. I think I finally said it properly. He's a social entrepreneur, co-owner, and chief relation officer at Planted Life, plantedlife.com, which is the expo that I will be at in Seattle in a matter of a few weeks by the time this episode goes live. And he's also the founder of Feast and Fallow Cafe and a dear friend that I had the opportunity to meet, over 4 or 5 years ago in Vancouver, probably?
Even more, man. I think it might have been 2018, yeah.
Six years ago.
Yeah, but it's wild, man. Time flies. Thanks, Maxime. Glad to be on the show. Congrats on the pod and everything you're doing and time in the States. Yeah, we miss you up here in Canada, but totally understand. Yeah, it's good to see you, though.
Well, I'm excited that we get to see each other again in Seattle in a few weeks. I know I was supposed to go to some of the Planted Expo in the previous years, and then I got kicked out of the States, and then I got stuck somewhere. And so I'm happy it's finally happening. It's happening at the perfect time.
Yeah, man. We're excited to have you up in Seattle with us.
Beautiful. Well, man, I want to talk about like your journey, your plant-based journey, and kind of, you have an interesting background as well for the people that don't know. And then we can talk about the Planted Expo and the upcoming event. So, how did it come about for you to go vegan?
Yeah, I mean, mostly out of health. So, for people that haven't heard my story before, I grew up in an Eastern European home and food was love. And I'm grateful for that, frankly. It taught me to really respect food and the power of food to bring people together. But, as somebody who didn't have a lot of particularly like other vices, other things that maybe my dysregulated self might have liked turned to in order to soothe myself, I ended up, unbeknownst to me, it was years later, 15 years after the fact, that I would have like really kind of latched onto this idea of turning to food for comfort. But at any rate, I ended up in high school tearing my ACL and my MCL and my meniscus in my right knee from skateboarding, okay. Of course. And
were you good, or was it your first step on a board?
Good. No, I had friends that were way better, but I was good enough to try stupid things.
Okay.
I mean, whatever that means. Anyways, I bailed, really blew out my knee, and I was a really active teen. Played a lot of different sports, just stayed active, and was never like a super thin kid, I was never the skinny kid, but I also wasn't like an overweight kid either. I was just like, standard teenage fare. But by the end of my grade 12 year, I had gained about 65 or 70 pounds.
Oh, wow. And
what ended up happening was I just ate my way through like my, I guess I must have been to some degree like high school depressed or whatever. In Canada, I love our medical system. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But when you have an elective surgery, something that's not life-threatening and you're young, and you don't have to go back to work or whatever, like you end up waiting a long time for MRIs, you end up waiting a long time for surgeons and all that kind of stuff. So, by the time all was said and done, it took me like 16 months before I was under the knife and having that knee, fully reconstructed. And in the meantime, I kept eating the way I'd always eaten. But completely stopped. Like I just couldn't do anything. I don't know. Have you ever had that kind of a traumatic, injury where you like completely sever two out of the four main ligaments in your knee and the cartilage? Like it was mass. Anyways, so I kept eating. I got really big. Like at my peak weight, I was a size 46 jacket and a 40 waist.
Wow.
But to just put that in perspective now, I'm somewhere between a 36 and a 38 jacket. So like 10 sizes smaller.
Yeah.
And I wear between a 30 and a 32 waist pant, depending on, the cut or whatever. So
yeah.
I went from approximately this size to like really big in a really fast, and I've got all the stretch marks all over my body to prove it.
Even at that young of an age, you got stretch marks?
Oh, yeah.
Because think the skin would be more elastic, right, to kind of recover?
Nah, it was bad, and it is bad. They're all still there. You know how it is. Stretch marks are forever. So at any rate, somebody said, you might consider going vegetarian. I was about 19 years old. I had just finished high school. I was out. And they said, there's a lot of benefits. And I grew up in a kind of an environment where vegetarianism and veganism wasn't altogether unfamiliar to me because of my religious upbringing in a Seventh-day Adventist home. Anybody that's been vegan for any length of time always hears these like the Adventist Study 1, Adventist Study 2, and Loma Linda University and the medical profession. And, like, for example, the brain doctors, the Dean and Aisha Sharzai, they're doctors over at Loma Linda. Anyways, Adventists have a long history of eating plant-based. And so I had some people in my life that encouraged me. They said, you can regain your health. And so, it wasn't at this point ecological. It wasn't animal rights. It was just like, I needed to figure out a way to be healthy. And so, I went vegetarian at 19 due to some advice, some mentors in my life that said, hey, you might want to consider going vegetarian. And then a doctor by the name of Joel Fuhrman published a book in 2003, was like with a major publisher, Little Brown, like really well-known publishing house. And it was called Eat to Live. And I read this Eat to Live, and it's basically a nutritarian diet. So he doesn't necessarily espouse veganism. It didn't even really have the ethical vegan perspective in it. What the book basically touts is if you want to be healthy, you have to jam as many nutrients as you can per calorie. And plant-based is the best way to put as many nutrients into your caloric buck. And I just got it. Like instantly, I was like, this makes perfect sense to me. Of course, these nutrient-dense foods are the ones I want to feed myself on. But it took me like another 11 years to figure out my own emotional eating part of it. And I basically, went back and forth between whole food plant-based and like some form of junk food veganism, for over a decade. And I would yo-yo in my weight, never losing a ton of weight, but losing enough to like kind of make myself feel really good. Like, oh, I'm well on my way. Like 30, 40, 50 pounds sometimes. And then regaining all of it because of some inability to kind of suss myself out and just kind of stress eating and all the rest of it. In 2011, my firstborn was just approaching like 2 years old or almost 3 years old. And he was running around and I chased him up a flight of stairs. And I know people have other versions of these kinds of stories, but it's true for me. Logan was running up these stairs and I like raced up to get to the top of them. And by the time I got to the top, I was so tuckered out. I thought I was going to faint. Like I thought I was going to black out. And I was like, oh boy, this is bad. And that was the first time that I like permanently cleaned up my diet. A fair bit. Like I basically removed all major sources of ultra processed foods and never returned, never looked back. I hadn't fully cleaned up like in terms of like the intuitive eating side of it, which I ended up realizing that for me, high carb, really high carb and low fat and like moderate to high protein, high carb, fairly low fat was like what my body thrived on. And that took me another 5 or 6 years to kind of figure out that side of it. Cause I was still eating a fair bit of like nuts and seeds and oils. And they were they were forming a fairly large part of my diet. And I couldn't lose the last 40 or 50 pounds. in 2016, 2017, somewhere right in and around there. Yeah, 2016. I kind of figured that out. Like, I just got to go like super high carb, fairly high protein, and like really low fat. And then it melted away. Like, I literally could not keep the weight on. Like, yeah, it got so crazy that I was eating like mountains of food and it was just melting away. And I was like, dang, I figured it out. So, yeah. You know, it hasn't been perfect since then because I still have a lot of emotional baggage tied to eating, and that comes and goes, right? Like, life is hard. It's stressful. There's a lot of things going on. And, you know, sometimes you indulge a little bit more in certain things, and you kind of beat yourself up about it. But, you know, more and more I'm getting, you know, as I get into my 40s, which is crazy. I can't believe I'm into my 40s, but, you know, I'm becoming more at peace with myself and kind of, trusting my instincts a little bit more. And at any rate, that's my origin story really for veganism and, weight loss. There you have it in what, like 8 minutes?
It was perfect. No, well, let me ask you this. So emotional stress eating is something a lot of people struggle with. Yeah. I had my fair years of dealing with that as well.
Yeah.
How, obviously, I don't want to say it never goes away, but like, life is stressful sometimes and you just make the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. So how have you managed to kind of gain a better control over it so that it doesn't happen as often as it did when you first started?
Right. Yeah, I don't know that it kind of goes away in that sense. I just have different tools that I use depending on what's going on in life. Like, my dad got sick in the fall. My dad is sick right now, really sick. Like, it's sort of touch and go. And I got pretty stressed. So let me just use that as a microcosm, as like a small example of seasons in life where you might be kind of pushed towards some of your like shadowy sides and to certain behaviors that don't serve you well. When I recognize that I'm in that kind of a season, at that point, I don't try to just like use the, I put in like some really strong boundaries. So at that point, like, everything exits the house that could be tempting. And I'm quick to just sort of replace everything with like lots of fruit around. I've always got fruit around. I've always got veggies around. That way, if I'm stress eating, the only thing that's accessible to me is stuff that's not going to harm me, right? Like, I can eat as much of it as I want. And so carrots, celery, apples, grapes, you know, oranges, you name it. They're just everywhere in my house. Like, people walk in and they're like, what is this cornucopia of fruits and vegetables? And anytime you see that in my house, you can know that I'm dealing with stuff. And rather than kind of like being, having to add another layer of stress of like being super mindful of what I eat, I just replace everything in the home with things that are not going to harm me. When it's less stressful, when it's just like day-to-day living, then it's all down to mindfulness, man. It's into that like sense of like, oh, I'm about to nourish myself. I'm about to partake in something that is sustenance, something that's life-giving, something that's cultural. Like, I'm going to eat food. I'm going to chew food. I'm going to taste food. I'm going to smell food. And I just try to be present to eating. Those are my favorite seasons. Those are the times where cooking is a joy. Eating with family is a joy. Going out to eat is a joy, because you're in it and you're like totally in alignment with yourself. And you're just like, this is enough. And I'm okay eating this in this way at this time. And I wish those seasons were always there. And I wish that I could say that, that I was just in a permanent state of like mindful eating and enjoyment. But I'd be lying. That's not true. So it just kind of depends, to answer your question, more fully, it just really depends on the season of life and what level of boundaries and walls I need to put up in order to protect myself and to be aware of myself. So yeah. So sometimes it's like, yeah, just like real tactical things, you know, like, you know, making sure I'm prepared, you know, with snacks. I remember when I was losing the weight in 2016, you know how people's glove boxes are full of like, whatever, like protein bars or whatever people put in their glove boxes, you know, gum and candy and snack foods. Like yeah. I would literally have a small little container of fruit in my car. So if I was driving somewhere and I got tired or I got snacky or I was like, I had some angst, I would just grab an apple and eat an apple, man. And I remember in 2016, 2017, when the weight was just coming off and I was just learning about all of these things, I could have like 8 apples in a day, man. Yeah. No problem. Just trying to work through what I was experiencing.
So that's actually one of my next question is, what happens when you have these moments of stress and you're traveling? Because right now you're traveling a lot, and so you don't have control as much to the environment, like having food in the kitchen, in the office, you're in hotel rooms, you're staying in different places, you potentially have to eat out at the restaurant a little bit more often. So how do you navigate these scenarios and moments of stress? Because a lot of people like myself travel a ton, and then that's the hard part, right? Is there's no kitchen.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, you know, fruits and veggies, you know, are easy to pick up at a grocery store. And, you know, we took the kids to New York City this past summer. And we like to teach. I've got 3 kids, 16, 13, and 5. And we like to kind of like show them, like, you know, you can still travel, you know, if you choose to feed yourself, you know, and don't eat out 3 times a day, it can be a reasonably priced holiday. In addition, you get to control what you consume. So, you know, and you can, you know, shop at the bodegas, you can shop at, you know, smaller grocery stores, you can shop at the Whole Foods, you can shop at wherever. And, you know, we teach them how to like, make oats with like the coffee urn in the hotel room. You know, you got your little traveling foldable, like we've got these bowls that like fold in on themselves, and like you can pop them out and then like, you know, boil the water, make oats, you know, always have fruit on hand. So, you know, smoothie packs, you know, there's just a lot of different things that you can travel with. And frankly, it's like, look, the truth of the matter is, you have to food prep at home if you want to succeed. You know, we batch cook lots of things on Sundays. You know, we prep a bunch of whole grains, whole grain like things. We prep a bunch of legumes all in the pressure cooker. We pre-chop veggies all to do like Buddha bowls, macro bowls, right? Like so we can have things, and then we have 3 or 4 different sauces on the go at any time. And then you can just kind of create that. And it's the same thing with travel. You know, you just got to be willing. And then, you know, show some discipline and some self-control when you're in the restaurants, and, you know, pick the thing that's going to be satisfying, that you're going to like, that's going to taste good to you. And if you're eating out once or twice a day, that's like not ideal. Like, you know, maybe you don't scarf down like the biggest portion, you know, you make a mindful choice, and it really depends. It really depends on how you perceive of those things. And I'm okay. Like for me, some things just have to be black or white. Yeah. There's lots of gray area in what I eat now. But then there's lots of things that are just black and white. Like if we take the kids out for vegan ice cream, like they know dad's not going to order an ice cream for himself. You know, he may have one of the tester spoons just to taste the flavor, just to say, hey, what are my kids having? You know, like I want to taste a little bit. And they're just used to it now. Like we'll go wherever, and they just know, you know, how dad's going to operate on these fronts. And we don't say no to them. Like they love vegan ice cream. And that's one of the joys of being a kid, you know, just going out with your parents and having ice cream. But we teach them everything in moderation. So yeah, you can travel successfully, but it takes some preparation. Frankly, it's the same thing at home though, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. You have those tools. I love what you shared about the meal prepping and the Buddha bowls and the macro bowls, because I don't know for you, man, but let's be honest, once you're several years into veganism, you just eat a variation of oatmeal, smoothies, and Buddha bowls and stir fries, which are basically a cooked Buddha bowl. That's like, you vary between those 4 things, and then maybe a wrap or a sandwich from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when you're a family of five, like I am, I mean, maybe as a you know, when you have a few less mouths to feed, you know, we do a lot of one pot things like chilies, stews, curries. We do a lot of those things because, you know, it's easy to put over brown rice and feed a lot of hungry mouths, especially my 16-year-old is like 3 inches taller than me, you know, plays high level basketball and, you know, he eats like a vacuum cleaner, like everything in sight, and you've got to be able to put enough calories in them. And so, you know, we tend to do like big one pot kinds of meals as well, a lot, especially in the winter.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It basically gets down to a pretty basic, for me, I actually think, cause I'm a foodie, I think in terms of cultural things, we tend to have one Asian dish, like East Asian dish. We have one South Asian dish, like a curry or whatever. Then we tend to have like a Latin based dish, you know, Mexican mostly, but like it could be a pupusa or something like that, that we've learned to make that we really like. And then, you know, yeah, like a macro bowl. We tend to have these like cuisines that we go through, and we do a pasta dish once a week as well. So, you know, that's the way we roll, and people just know, you know, like it's my wife, Heather Joy, calls Friday Stir Fridays because we do a big stir fry, right? Stir Fridays, and we do Taco Tuesdays, and like, yeah, we've got our kind of go-tos.
Yeah, I'm sure my cooking style will change as I expand the family as well, for sure, because I won't definitely be cooking the same way. So just out of curiosity, like at what point in the process did you kind of become a pastor?
Oh, that was early, actually. So my connection to church and faith wasn't in high school. I was like not really that kid. In fact, I think it was a surprise to most of my friends and family when I decided to do it. That being said, I did do it young, like basically after my first year in university. I just had this, like, I've always been drawn to like the meaning of life kinds of questions and trying to suss out like, why are we here and what is happening with, like, why am I alive? Am I alive? Like, what does it mean to be alive? Like, I've just been drawn to those kinds of questions. And I think growing up in a Christian environment, it was a bit of a default mechanism. I'm still a person of faith. I believe in God. I think that there is something out there unifying and pulling everything together. You know, it's love. But, you know, for me, it's personal. Anyways, so I was right out of high school and drawn to these kinds of questions and kind of went down this road of reading a lot of different literature. You know, this is pre-internet. It wasn't pre-internet. Like, high-speed internet had, like, just become a thing in universities and, like, public institutions, but nobody had high-speed internet at their house yet. That's how old I am. So, you know, you still have to go to the library and actually read a book. You know, you weren't spending hours on YouTube going down rabbit holes of like YouTube videos or anything like that.
I remember my library card taking out books.
Yeah. You actually have to go and learn and read and do a bit of research. Man, I'm making this a long story, but...
it's all good. We have time.
Yeah. So I just kind of like, I was drawn to those questions, you know, how do we do life together? What does it mean to be in community? You know, what makes us similar? What makes us different? You know, how do we understand the ins and outs of life together? So, I guess probably because of my Christian background and disposition, that ended up feeling the most reasonable approach. And so I was like, oh man, yeah, like this pastor thing is about helping people think through these kinds of questions. And, you know, when you're a pastor, you spend a lot of time with people at momentous occasions. They're about to get married. They're about to die. They're about to have a child. You spend a lot of time with people when they're in crises, because that's when they start asking these kinds of questions. So, you know, when, you know, when shit hits the fan, can I swear? Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
You know, when shit hits the fan, people start wondering, like, what is this all about? Like, what is life all about? And so, yeah, I liked being present to those kinds of things, you know, because I grew up in a situation where, you know, I didn't have, like, you know, a standard, well, I mean, pretty standard, like a lot of people have my experience. Like, I grew up without a dad, single parent, a lot of like father-like figures in my life, and kind of thinking through all of those things. So, you know, it all kind of coalesced into this desire to be present with people in community, asking those kinds of questions. So yeah, I went to university and studied theology in undergraduate studies. And shortly after graduating, I went to work as a pastor and did that full time. I guess about 15 years. Yeah. Just shy of 15 years. So,
that's when I
haven't been
you.
Doing it full time, for the last several years. But I am still an ordained minister and still have a profound faith in God. But yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's when I met you, you did a vegan potluck at your church.
And yeah. So that was, that's interesting. Sometimes worlds collide. Like, do you ever think in Venn diagrams? You know what a Venn diagram is? Like those circles, yeah. And they're like different domains, and then you look for the areas of overlap. So yeah, I definitely, I always thought like that idea of health and like care of the earth and care of animals and like how all of that works. Those are all spiritual questions. Those are all questions of meaning. Like, how should we treat, you know, non-human animals?
Yeah.
How should we treat the land, the earth, the Amazon forest? Like, how should we do these things? Those are meaning-making questions. When you sit there and you think about that and you think, well, what is my responsibility? How should I, what should my posture in life be towards these issues, these social issues, these dilemmas, these paradoxes, these various things that we're kind of wondering about? And so, you know, I found in veganism something that espoused my nonviolent posture in life. Yeah. I saw a lot of times when people would get agitated or they would feel defensive, they would frequently find themselves in a posture of violence. And look, I wasn't immune to that. Like, I grew up playing hockey. And if Steve Markovich was known for anything in high school sports, like, oh man, there are stories my high school coaches and my high school teammates would tell you, like, you know, I could have a bit of a short fuse, and I've come a long ways. Like, I became aware of it over time that, you know, this was not conducive to the way I wanted to be in the world. And it was just another one of those areas, much like overeating, you know, yeah, or any of those things where you're like, oh, there's a better way to be in this world where you can be nonviolent in your posture. And so veganism as a nonviolent kind of philosophy was really also enticing. But again, like, as I mentioned, you know, it began with health. I only became aware of all of like the intricacies of veganism, you know, as the years elapsed, then I became more aware of what that meant, you know? So for years I wore leather. And I called myself a vegan because I didn't really, like, as long as I was eating vegan, I was a vegan, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it just, the shoe didn't drop. Like, it didn't all connect right away. But in time, yeah, it did. So the reason I did the supper clubs, they were not fully tied to the church. I just happened to use church facilities and kind of tie it in because it was alongside of, it was parallel to my experience, my spiritual experience. And so it felt like it could coexist and, yeah, work together and be supportive, but stand on its own. Like, my supper clubs were not particularly spiritual, you know, like, it was about the food. It was about the cooking. It was about the ingredients. You know, it was about those things, but those are all important questions that one has to answer. What will I eat? Where will I source it from? You know, why would I make that choice to eat those things and not those things? Why would I cook in this way and not that way? You know, those are all, I think, important questions. And they're not just scientific questions. They're not just questions of health. They are questions of ethics and questions of morals as well. So, you know, all of that is sort of tied into it.
Yeah. Well, two things I'd like to share about that. First of all, is the reason I want to bring up the that you were a pastor as well and kind of along your journey is because I never got to say, think properly, thank you for the day that I texted you to kind of rush you to the hospital. So just for the people listening, Stephen and I, when Jen was about to pass away, it was one of her dreams to be married. And so I texted Stephen, I was like, hey, dude, like we're at the hospital. This might be it. Like, can you rush here basically and do this? And you're like, yeah, just let me know. And I think she ended up passing away, I think, like 20 minutes after or something.
And this was in the pandemic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the pandemic. I wasn't even allowed at first in the hospital with her. Yeah. I had to like to be isolated and all that. So just a massive thank you for being willing to kind of step up. You're a huge help. And it was cool to know that you would show up. Big thank you for that, because I never really got to say it properly because we didn't really see each other since then.
You took off not too long. I mean, it was the pandemic, right? Like a lot of people weren't seeing each other, but I remember that text, man. And I remember the journey. We all watched, you know, as you stood by Jen and supported her through that experience. And you guys did everything from the outside looking in, you know, it looked as though you didn't leave any stone unturned to find ways to prolong Jen's life and to give her the life she wanted. I appreciated you. I appreciated how you show up in the world. So when a text comes in and says, hey man, can you be present in this way? I mean, it was a no-brainer. Of course. Yeah, man. But thanks for the shout out. Definitely would have been there, but yeah, sad how that all transpired. But look at you on the other end, you know, just continuing on and getting a sense of, you know, what's next for you, and congrats on everything as it's kind of panned out. You know, you're in a happy spot.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. We're almost at 800 people's lives that have been transformed since that day. So those people would have never been transformed if it wasn't for that. So something beautiful came out of it.
Yeah. Totally.
So you mentioned about like kind of combining veganism and the church and the ethical way to kind of show up. Did you have a chance to watch Christspiracy from Cam and Kip? Okay.
I'll be honest. I saw like a cut about 15, 16 months ago. So I don't know if it's the final cut. I haven't seen the one that got theatrically released in the States. I'm assuming it's at least
close
90% overlap, but honestly, all of my commentary, anything we talk about now is like with the caveat that I saw like the one with the watermarks on it and everything, because the folks over at Christspiracy, Kip and those friends, they reached out at the time they were contemplating places to release the film to do a screening. And there was some talk of actually screening it at a Planted Expo. Didn't all pan out in the end, but yes, I've seen it.
What were your thoughts on it? Because I have a lot of pastors that are in our, surprisingly, we have a lot of pastors in our program that are vegan. And I was like, they haven't had a chance to see it. So I'm curious to hear your take from the version from 15 months ago.
No, I think first and foremost, it's a film that should have been made and needed to be made. And I think when they kind of like locked into it, because of this whole idea of nonviolence, bloodshed, this idea of how do we, like, there's this key concept of like the domain or like having dominion over something. And in this case, dominion over creatures, non-human creatures, in the Christian and Jewish scriptures that are part of the story. So from that perspective, in terms of Jesus as a nonviolent figure, a figure that absorbs violence and in turn, returns into the world forgiveness and goodness and kindness and understanding and empathy. From that perspective, it's all good. I think there was one argument in one perspective, and they may have, like, I gave them this feedback. So the final cut might have some level of this. I just don't know. I haven't seen it. I was having a conversation with somebody at the Planted Expo in Toronto who had just recently seen it because, you know, everybody's seeing it right now. And they're all like, hey, this was great. This was wonderful. And I said, I can't wait to see the final cut. But there was one basic element, and that is, I think the animal argument in terms of what the cross and what the message of Jesus was coming to do to kind of reverse a violent posture towards anything, certainly towards other humans, and in this case also towards animals, and using animals for economic exploitation. That is definitely an application of what took place on the cross. There's no two ways about it. I think it's a valid argument. I think what they set out to do, to say, you know, actually Jesus and many religious people and a lot of original kind of versions of early religions, whatever that religion happens to be, you know, being nonviolent, I think is a valid argument to make. So I want to say that. I think the argument is valid. But I think it needed to be kind of, in my estimation, sort of placed in context around, you know, maybe like if there's concentric circles of meaning, like what was the primary meaning, at least for Christians who are sort of immersed in theological reflection, right? So in the Christian scriptures, it's humans that are made in the image of God. Okay, so humankind is made in the image of God. And what I believe is happening at the cross in this sort of thing is some form of God basically saying, I want to be in relationship. I want to be in relationship. And violence is in the way of relationship. Yeah. So I think if you set out to say what Jesus did was putting an end to violence as a means of problem solving, then you say, well, okay, how are all the ways that Jesus put an end to violence? Okay, there shouldn't be war between humans. Great. When you're, you know, in an argument with your spouse, you should use nonviolent communication techniques, you know, et cetera. You should use all of these things. Oh, and by the way, like our posture towards the animal world should also be nonviolent and non-exploitative.
Yeah.
And so as long as you kind of put it in context that God wants to be in relationship to everything and violence is in the way, and oh, we just haven't gone far enough in our thinking to see that actually when Jesus flips the tables and says, you know, this house of prayer has become a den of robbers or a den of thieves, and, you know, all the money changers and all the business and economics of forgiveness, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. But in the concentric circles, it's one of the wider concentric circles. It's not, in my estimation, the primary one. So if they had clearly articulated this, like Jesus came to end violence and it applies to animals, I would have said, man, that movie is one of the best movies ever made. But I feel like that connection, and I was waiting for it the whole time. I was like, okay, make that connection. What about atonement? What about, like, and I was like, I was like, really? I wish I could have given them like that. And really, all it needed to be was like 2 minutes. You don't have to take the amount of time I just took on the podcast to talk about it. Like, you just needed a little bit to kind of set the stage. Violence is in the way of relationships, primarily us to God and us to one another. And oh yeah, and towards the animals and all of this, like animal sacrifice and the spilling of blood in order to have some kind of a relationship with God, you know, that was never God's intention. And Jesus came to put an end to that. Yeah, he did. Great.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a fantastic movie. It definitely touches on the fact that Jesus is nonviolent and that veganism is nonviolent. And then also just the general sense of most religions have this, like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, like the kind of golden rule ethic.
Yeah.
And that golden rule ethic should apply to the non-human animals that we share this world with. I think is wonderful. So I'm glad the movie's made. I'm looking forward to seeing the final cut. It's an interesting.
I'm happy that I asked, because it's definitely a different perspective. Because again, I got to saw the final cut. So yeah, it does make sense what you shared though, because I don't think they went that wide with it.
I
remember the part in the movie with what you're sharing. So I'm excited for you to see the final version.
Yeah, me too.
So man, let's talk about Planted Expo. So the one upcoming in Seattle is the first American one that you guys are going to be doing?
First one in the US, man. We're taking a bit of a, you know, bit, I don't know, just step out and saying like, we've got to be in the US, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
A lot of vegans here.
Well, and not just for that, not just as a like, as a right step for Planted as a brand, yes. But also just the small businesses in the way everything interacts and the kind of small, like veganism is still in the grand scheme of things, very small compared to the whole food world, to the whole fashion world, to the whole world of beauty and cosmetics, all of the kinds of brands that come to a Planted Expo. Veganism is still niche, right? It's still a fairly narrow application. And so stepping out and being in the US and kind of being a part of sort of just the wider community felt like the right thing to do, because there's a lot of Canadian brands, you know, as they begin to scale and we see that growth, right? At Planted Expo and formerly Veg Expo, Veg Expo, Planted Expo has seen brands that have, you know, started in some small little shop and then like exploded, you know, and then also disappeared, you know, and I don't have to name names, but like local here, British Columbia brands that like made it to, you know, certainly in the Canadian and US markets and now are completely gone.
Yeah.
So we just thought it was really important to step out, try something, be present in the US and learn what business in the small business, medium-sized business world was like in the US. And that's the thing, right? So every city of any major size in both Canada and the US has a flourishing small and medium-sized plant-based business community. So, and they don't have to be fully plant-based. They could just be brands that have 1, 2, 3, 4 SKUs that are plant-based or vegan in nature, because they recognize that that's a growing segment of the market and they want to get it out in front of their audience. So what we do, what Planted Expo does, is it connects the core target plant curious audience. And that's a big thing people need to recognize. Like, we set out to reach an audience that is simply exploring what plant-based and vegan living might mean for them to the degree that they're willing to kind of engage it. We have never set out to like do an amazing event for vegans. Like vegans are going to come because it's what they want to do and see, you know, and be a part of. But ultimately we want to reach the flexitarian, omnivorous, like, conscious consumer who's saying, what are the best things for me? What are the best choices? What are the products that are available to me that tread the lightest on this earth, are the most health promoting for my body, you know, and are in alignment with my ethics. And we happen to believe that plant-based and vegan products tick those boxes the best. And so we want to be able to take those small passion businesses that are operating in every one of those cities and introduce the audience to those brands and vice versa. Like, look, there's a lot of people interested in your product. And oh yeah, look at all the different brands and products that are available to you. Like, it's a win-win both for the audience and for the businesses.
Yeah. And so what can people expect for the Seattle convention?
Look, it's an opportunity to be in the same room with people that are there to try the best of what the small business and medium-sized businesses have to offer in their city, right? So they can go and try like all of the artisanal faux meats, all of the artisanal cheeses, and then any other number of kind of CPG consumer packaged goods brands that are available in their city. And some wider, like, you know, we don't limit it to like, you have to be from Seattle, you have to be from Vancouver, you have to be from Toronto to exhibit. Like, we have brands come from all over. But when we go out to like build a show in a city, we want like a heavy representation of Seattle brands at this first Seattle event, because the audience that is coming is a Seattle audience. And we think it's important for those two groups to know each other. who's in Seattle and what products are being made and how can we get those two people in the same room together? So, you know, you can expect like a happy environment. You can expect a lot of samples, a lot of great deals for shopping. And then, you know, just a great lineup on the stage of various doctors, athletes, influencers, authors, nonprofit owners, doctors, did I say doctors? Like just people that are engaged in advocating and educating people on ways in which the plant-based and vegan lifestyle might affect them. So yeah, we've got like people speaking about animal sanctuaries. We've got Dr. Greger coming to talk about his new book on how not to age. We've got athletes and entrepreneurs like yourself. We've got cookbook authors. We've got like Instagram megastars like Carly Bodrug. Like there's just a lot of really great people that come and they share their stories. That's kind of what it is. And it's over the course of 2 days. You can buy a 1 day ticket. You can buy a 2 day ticket if you want to catch like all of the speakers. And often there's so many brands and you can like spend a lot of time there that you can't even get through the whole show. Like you may only have an hour or two each day. And then you come back the next day if you buy a 2 day ticket and you can catch the other half of the show and the other half of the speakers. And you just kind of come and it's just a really great vibe. Like, you know, as soon as the doors open, you know, there's brands ready, samples ready, deals ready. And then the stage is kind of from the moment we open to the moment we close, there's somebody on stage sharing something meaningful. And we take great care to kind of curate who's on that stage. And people come and hear your story and hear what you're up to. So that's what people can expect. You know, it's not intended for just a strictly vegan audience. There's something there for everybody.
Yeah.
So whether you're kind of fashion minded or kind of beauty care minded, what like kind of wherever you're kind of thinking, you'll have an opportunity to you know, kind of suss out the brands that are available in your city and talk to the entrepreneurs, talk to the business owners, ask questions about the products, taste the products the way the brands want them to taste, because they kind of go out of their way to make sure their samples taste appropriate. Like, I don't know if you've ever walked into a store and you're like, what is this faux meat?
Yeah.
What's it going to be like? How do I use it? Or this cheese, what's the best application for this cheese? Is it a kind of a melty cheese? Is it a harder cheese? Like, you know, and then you can go and just ask the questions. What did you make it with? How did it go? And like, yeah, there's just great, great opportunities to kind of rub shoulders with all of the brands and all of the people that are going to be there.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, no, I'm excited. I decided to do a Fit Vegan workshop the Friday before the event. Cool. So I have some clients flying in from outside Seattle. So we can do like a workout and dinner, and then they're going to come to the expo after for the weekend. So
we'll have a
bunch of our crew out there.
Smart, really smart.
Yeah. And so also for the people listening, I will link the website down below if you want to get some tickets to the expo. I will be there. I will have a booth as well. My wife, Ivy, is going to be there with me. If you guys know Coach Sarah.
You can use the code FITVEGAN for 15% off your tickets.
Beautiful.
FITVEGAN. Yeah. FITVEGAN for 15% off your tickets.
I'll put that down below for everyone. But yeah, myself, Ivy, our head coach Sarah is going to be there. We're going to have, I think Robert's going to come and work out with us, I think on Friday too.
Yeah, Robert Cheek's coming. Yeah. He was awesome in Toronto.
Yeah, love Robert. Him. Carly's going to be there as well in Seattle too?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. She's supposed to go on the podcast as well.
Yeah, a lot of overlap between the three cities in terms of the stage lineup because, you know, cities get jealous. They're like, what? Why is so-and-so only over there? But there's a number of changes between the cities too, but like a lot of our headliners are the same headliners from city to city.
Oh, is Nimai going to be there too in Seattle?
Nimai's going to be in Seattle. Yeah.
Oh shit. I'll text him. Okay. I didn't know if he was going.
Yeah. Won't be in Vancouver though.
Okay.
It won't be in Vancouver. Yeah. So there's a few changes, but yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, I'm excited to see everyone there. And ultimately, you're going to be super busy.
I'm the one on the stage, man. I'll be doing more of this. Yeah, I'm like the MC facilitator. There's a lot of fireside chats, and I'm just the one that kind of asks all the questions and just connects in all of those ways.
Beautiful. Well, I'm excited to see you again. And for the people listening, and all the information down below, you can save money on your tickets. I'm going to say Stefan, any last words of wisdom you'd like to share with the audience?
Oh man.
Or that you'd like to plug. Doesn't have to be wisdom.
I mean, look, I'm just grateful for everything that's kind of going on. Grateful that there's people that are still supportive of helping people live their best lives. And you're doing that. And I'm delighted to be a part of your podcast and honored to have been invited to the show. Thank you so much. Looking forward to meeting any Seattle folk that hear this, that are coming out to the event in Seattle. It'll be good times. Come and introduce yourself.
Beautiful. Well, everyone, thank you very much for listening. Again, all the link will be down below in the description, whether you're listening on audio or on YouTube. And we'll see you guys in the next podcast episode or in Seattle at the Expo.
Perfect. Bye. Thanks, Maxime. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to rate the podcast as it helps us grow and spread our message. And if you know this will help and resonate with someone, be sure to send it their way so that they can have the opportunity to level up their life as well.